and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. I ain't gonna lie, I'm struggling today. We had our quail banquet last night, and it was wee late when I got home last night. But our weather is brought to you every hour of the Today in Ag show by Hobart Farm and Garden. Down there in Hobart, Oklahoma, in Kiowa County. 68 degrees. Nathan Brewer dew point's 58. Humidity 71. The wind's out of the east, northeast, 7 miles an hour. Gusts up to 10 miles an hour. And today's high is supposed to be around 75. I don't know if we're going to get there or not. But anyway, it's a beautiful fall day out there. It's cloudy. Great day to be out. Thunderstorms are possible in much of Oklahoma and Texas panhandles throughout tonight, and I checked the radar a while ago, and the storms look like they're moving due south, just going straight north, but it looks like they're easing across the Texas panhandle right now, and looks like quite a bit of rain coming. Hopefully it gets over here. To tonight, bringing heavy rainfall to the region, according to the National Weather Service. Parts of eastern Colorado will also see some of these storms. Widely scattered, numerous showers and a few embedded thunderstorms will be possible over most areas, says the National Weather Service. It's in its report this morning. Main hazards, if thunderstorms were to occur, will be locally heavy rain and cloud-to-ground lightning. In the northern plains, meanwhile, a frost advisory has been issued for North Dakota. Temperatures are expected to fall as low as 35 degrees in that state, resulting in frost formation. In eastern Iowa and northern Illinois, chance of thunderstorms will persist through the weekend. Isolated thunderstorm chances will expand from west to east tonight, the agency said. Occasional isolated thunderstorms are possible Saturday and Sunday. Severe weather is not expected, but locally heavy rain is very possible. That means the old corn harvest up north, where they're at in Kansas and up there in Missouri and in the Midwest, it's going to come to a screeching halt this weekend. Let me tell you about what happened last night at the North Fork Quail Forever Banquet. It was great. We had a great turnout. Not sure how much money was gross last night. We got that sealed up, and we got to have a board meeting to unseal that and count it all at once in case we got a thief in the bunch, but we don't. But anyway, so we had a great turnout with our sponsors, Heath Frazier, Brian Taylor, Bradley Britton, Blake Burr and KCO, Ryan Wimberly, and there was one more in there somewhere. Oh, no, Bradley sponsored two tables. But we had a good time. There was some fresh new faces in there last night. The Silt family, all of them, kids, Bandy, Amy, Sandra, Brian, they were all there last night, and that was so, I was so glad to see them here, there. They've been begged to come for 3 or 4 years, and now I think we've got them hooked. Brian won a gun. Bandy purchased one in the auction, and then he won one. And so, and their kids had a good time helping me drawing the tickets out. Even though some of the locals at one of the tables accused us of cheating. They're listening. I know they're listening. I'm not going to mention any names, but anyway, I got them squared away pretty quick, and we want to thank the Elks Lodge for having us there. We also issued checks to the Merritt and Sarah shooting teams from the high school and the Beckham County 4-H shooting team. We issued them somewhere between $7,500 and $8,000 in checks last night. That's one of the big reasons why we have these banquets, golf tournaments, and raffles, gun raffles, is to help these shooting teams. It takes a lot of money, but they're well worth it. The state 4-H champions are right here in this county, right here. So it's all good. But we had a good time. The steaks were good. We had some Kansas City strips, and it was really good food. Thanks for the Elks Lodge, and I want to thank Russ Rundle, Craig Puckett, Butch Black, Keith and Kathy Smith, Rusty Wilson, Kelly Ripito, I think I said Butch Black, but I'll say it again. Butch Black, that's the officer board here with me, and we had a great time. And that's the board members that helped put this on, and it was very successful. And next year, you guys keep your ear out for when the tickets go on sale, because we didn't sell any at the door last night. And we got 3 new lifetime members to Quail Forever last night. Blake Brewer, Johnny Kincaid, and Andrew Hill from Oklahoma City. I think that's Russ Rundle's son-in-law. But anyway, 3 lifetime members. That's awesome. We got about 15 in the chapter now. And that ought to get some eyes rolling around at the national headquarters. Let's see. Let's go on to the today's cash grain prices. Soybeans are down. Look like they're down anyway. 1173. Wheat's at 713. It looks like it's up. Milo's at 521. And corn's at 551. The USDA's September quarterly grain stocks that we talked about yesterday caused some major market reaction after the USDA raised the soybean stocks numbers, with one analyst calling the move unprecedented. As a result, soybean futures dropped double digits. USDA's report showed old crop soybean stocks are now pegged at 256 million bushels. While that number is down 51% from last year, the revision was higher than trade and many analysts expected. The adjustment is to carry out came from the USDA revising last year's production up 80 million bushels, moving the yield to 51 bushels per acre. The biggest one on the volatile was a volatile surprise, and probably the biggest surprise was the soybean number. Seeing that the carried out grow like it did was kind of unprecedented historically. Jim McCormick of Ag Market said, "We have a pretty good handle on what we use on beans consumptions bean consumption wise, so the surprise usually comes on the supply end, and that's what happened again this year." USDA said old crop corn stocks up at 1.24 billion bushels, which is down 36% from last year, but also higher than the trade expected. The agency said it was smaller corn harvest last year, revising down 71 million bushels, which is the lowest since 2014. That puts last year's yield at 171.4 bushels per acre, which is down a little more than a half a bushel from the previous estimate. The wheat stocks were a little lower than the market expected, coming in at 1.78 billion bushels, which is down 18% from a year ago. Production came in at 1.64 billion bushels on a smaller hard red winter wheat crop and a slightly smaller spring wheat crop. Wheat yields were the Durham wheat yields were the lowest in 30 years. But the wheat futures did jump in overnight trading after the government report yesterday fell to its lowest level in 14 years on the inventories. All wheat inventories on September 1st were reported at 1.78 billion bushels, down 18% from the previous year. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said in a report yesterday that that's the lowest level since 2007, according to the USDA data. Old crop stockpiles fell 36%, and I mentioned that earlier, to 1.24 billion. Analysts polled had expected that the stocks to be at 1.85 billion bushels, corn inventories at 1.16 billion bushels, and soybean carryout at 1.5 174 million. So anyway, with the rainfall expected this weekend through the Midwest, it's going to slow the harvest up. And about 18% of the corn crop was in the bin at the start of this week, up from the previous 5-year average of 15%. That's according to the USDA. The soybean harvest was 16% complete as of Sunday, ahead of the 13% average for this time of the year. So anyway, well, when we come back, we're going to talk cattle, the cattle market, legal stuff, family, and I got a good story from the National Beef Board from Marty Smith, who is the previous president of that. And we're going to talk some stories, and we got some good stuff coming up. So stand by and join me when I come back. It's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
We had commercial cattle, and as a commercial producer, you're always looking for a place to buy bulls that are going to work well for your program. And as we struggled to do that, we decided to raise our own. And so we started producing the traits that we were looking for to buy in bulls. Lori White, B&L Red Angus, blredangus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Benji White, B&L Red Angus, blredangus.com. On Facebook, follow us at B&L Red Angus.
We learned in grade school 1 plus 1 equals 2 and 2 plus 2 equals 4. So what does quality feed equal? Results you can be proud of. It's simple math with a little common sense. Barnes Feed Service in Hobart, Oklahoma has done the math and mixed years of common sense into their feeds so you'll get the results you deserve. And remember, their name ends with service, something they take pride in every day. See their ads in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale at Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Register at lmaauction.com or download the LMA Ringside app. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and we do appreciate it.
Every trust is a little bit different. Some of them, those assets may need to grow because they've got to take care of somebody for a lot of years. Sometimes those assets need to maintain or they need to just support a certain lifestyle. There's lots of different objectives for trusts. And what we do is we determine what the objective is for each trust. And then we do our very best to manage the assets in that trust to achieve that objective. I'm Nan Shiblum, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust in Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
When we're all on the same page, things run smoother, work gets completed faster, life is easier. And that's exactly what advanced technology from Valley does. IconX brings all of your pivots together into one manageable network with full remote capabilities, regardless of the brand. Get the most out of your pivots at a fraction of the cost of a full panel upgrade. Valley IconX. Any brand of pivot. One connected network. Smart irrigation. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
I am. I'm back. Temperature has risen 1 degree at 69. Winds are out of the east, 6 miles an hour, gusting up to a whole 8 mile an hour out of the north. That didn't even make sense there, but that's what it says, and I'm going to stick with it. That's my story. Speaking of stockyards, Hobart Stockyards, here's some of the numbers from them from Wednesday. We had some in the 400 to 500 weights. There was some on the steers. There was some averaging 461, brought up to $1.48. There was some 700 pounders in the 700 pound range, 728 average weight, and they were bringing up to $1.25. And on the heifers, there was some 4 to 5 weights, average weight 449, brought up to $1.35. And then we got some heifers weighing 800 to 900, average weight 827, bringing up to $1.14. So looks like the heifers are down a little bit this week. They had some cows in there. It was bringing up to 65 cents a pound on slaughter cows, and bulls in there bringing up to 93. And then they had looked like some pears, and they're bringing 1350 up to 1350. That's at Hobart. And today, Elk City Livestock Auction is happening right down there on the south side of Elk City. They're pretty close to Atwoods. It's happening down there today, so go by there. And then Monday, Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction will be happening over there east of Clinton along I-40 by the Cherokee truck stop. If you got any buying or selling needs or any questions about anything, give Mr. Brandon Hickey a call. And if you're taking some to want to take some to Hobart next Wednesday, give Mr. Rex Fleming a buzz, and he will take care of you. If you at least go to the sale, he'll serve you lunch up there in your chair. So that's pretty handy, I think. Well, I found some stuff that I thought was interesting. I've been digging for a week, and I finally come across it this morning. But each year, the USDA National Agriculture Statistics Service conducts a nationwide survey to gather data and compile a report showing average cash rental and rates across the United States. The highest pasture line, I just went ahead and picked Texas, and the highest pasture land rental rates were reported at $20.50 an acre and $20 an acre in Texas. The lowest pasture range averages were 40 cents, 0.40 to 0.90 an acre, respectively. That's must be some rocks and cactuses and mesquites out there. But anyway, that was that one. The statewide average for Texas come in at $7.10 an acre, which is a 10-cent increase from last year. Now, that's pasture land. The highest reported rate for irrigated cropland was $153 an acre, and that was in Sherman County. The lowest reported rate for irrigated cropland came in from Carson County at $38.50 an acre. That's the statewide average for Texas was $100 per acre, up $5 an acre from last year. This is on some non-irrigated cropland. The highest reported average rental rate for non-irrigated cropland was $78.50 an acre, followed by a $67 an acre rental report. The lowest reported rates was in Sutton County at $5.60 an acre and Kendall County at $7.60 an acre. The statewide average reported that at $30 an acre and remained unchanged from 2020. Dr. Greg K.S. Pulled together the following table that I'm going to read a little bit on cash leases between 20 and 2021 for each of the Texas regions. Now, I'm going to pick on the Northern High Plains because that's where we're at. It's our neighbor to the west here. So in 2020, the pasture land average price was $7.20. In 2021, the average price is $8.23. Irrigated, in 2020, the average price was $116, and in 2021, $92.44. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they're having water issues out there or what's going on, but it dropped basically $24 since last year on irrigated. Non-irrigated was $25.50 an acre in 2020, but in 2021, it's $23.68. So that's down too. Pasture land is up, and farm ground is down in the Texas Panhandle, according to this report. So anyway, I thought that was a kind of a interesting reports. Oh, there's another one in here. 2021. Hang on here. Let me finish this. I missed this one. Northern low plains. Let's go with the northern low plains. That actually is our right next to us. The northern plains is out west and up north. The pasture was 630 an acre in 2020. It's 722 in 2021. Irrigated was $72 an acre in 2020, and they have no information on 2021 on the irrigated. Non-irrigated was $23.50 an acre in 2020, and $21 this year, and that's right around Canadian, Wheeler, and Shamrock, and that's the numbers from in there. So anyway, that was a interesting deal. Well, there's some more news coming out of Washington. Farmers and ranchers would be eligible for $10 billion in disaster relief for losses in 2020. And this year, under the short-term government funding bill passed by Congress yesterday, the bill also extended the life of livestock price reporting bill until December 3rd, giving lawmakers time enough to agree on a multi-year reauthorization. President Biden signed the bill last night. All over this country, we're experiencing the difficulty of natural disasters, says House Appropriations Chairwoman Rosa DeLauro. Shortly before the House passed the bill 254 to 175, we got $10 billion to cover the losses in the agriculture out of $28.6 billion in disaster relief nationwide. Agriculture assistance would include wine grapes tainted by smoke from wildfires across, along with losses caused by drought, hurricanes, floods, excessive heat and extreme cold, winter storms, including the polar vortex, and damaging precipitation. Some California winemakers didn't make a 2020 vintage after their crops were burned or tainted by smoke, and similar problems are expected because of this year's fires. Grapes are damaged when volatile prions released by burning wood are absorbed at a higher than usual levels and the flavor is affected. Smoke damages has hit wineries in California, Oregon, and Washington State since 2017. The bill directed $750 million to livestock producers for losses this year from drought on the wildfires. Well, you guys know that every day I stream live on Facebook. And I take text messages on the KECO Ag text line at 580-225-9697. So if you guys got anything you want to talk about today or got any questions, yesterday that was a great show with Professor Gillian from Texas A&M. He's originally from Bolivia, but he is really sharp on wheat plants, soil health, and all that good stuff. Anyway, he's got some experiments coming up over the next 3 years, and he's going to report in on us on a timely manner to see what's see how he's progressing with those reports, and it'd be great. When we get back, we'll talk some cattle. You're listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, September 24th. 1,915 head were sold. 15 head of steers at 396 brought 185. 3 at 471 brought 168. 7 at 512 brought 164. 4 at 553 brought 135. 11 at 641 brought 124. 13 at 817 brought 125. 11 head of heifers at 387 brought 142. 10 at 532 brought 135.50. 5 at 604 brought 122. 12 at 652 brought 130. 22 at 782 brought 130. 11 at 960 brought 126. Butcher cows were 16 to 77. Bred cows 310 to 1110. Butcher bulls 60 to 90. Pairs brought 1200 to 1310. Elk City Livestock Auction, South Highway 6 in Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
It's known as the thief in the night. A lack of cattle mineral can lead to decreased weaning weights, small, weak calves, and severely compromised health. Don't let a gap in your feeding program rob your herd's performance. Stop by Farmers Union Co-op in Elk City and pick up a bag of Purina Wind and Rain Storm Mineral today. Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City is your authorized Purina dealer.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
The Day in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
I am. I'm right here. I didn't go nowhere. Still 68, 69 degrees here. Dew points at 58. Winds out of the south, or I'm sorry, east, northeast, 7 miles an hour. And so anyway, I will have your Long Ranger forecast coming up in my last segment, coming up here in about 15 whole minutes. Well, here we go. Federal judge in Minnesota ordered a class action lawsuit against JBS, Tyson, National Beef, and Cargill to proceed. In the ruling, Judge John Tunaham found the plaintiffs have pled the defendants conspired to suppress the price of fed cattle and increase the price of beef. We are pleased the effort to restore price and transparency and competitiveness in the cattle markets is moving forward in the courtroom. The case is nearly 2.5 years old, and we look forward to the next step in litigation. And these comments was from Rob Loro, National Farmers Union president, which is the plaintiff, which is a plaintiff in the case, one of the plaintiffs. The case now enters the discovery phase of the trial, where evidence and information will be presented to demonstrate how packers violated the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Packers and the Stockyard Act, and the Commodity Exchange Act. The class action antitrust lawsuit was originally filed in April 2009 by RCAF USA through its counsel Scott Scott Attorneys at Law LLP, along with Cafferty Globes, Merriweather, and Springle, if I said that right, LLP. USA's antitrust action alleges the four processors violated the Sherman antitrust law by 1890, and we got, I just had a text in, I had to read, sorry, Mr. Rusty Wilson is listening from Roger Mills County, and he just seen a covey of birds, so that's good. Thanks for listening, Rusty. As the case moves to discovery, NFU will continue to hold the packers accountable. And the cattle market has been very damaging to independent farmers and ranchers, and we look forward to continue to advocate for our members in the courtroom. A public version of this order will be available at a later date, according to plaintiffs. On May 22nd of this year, or 2020, last year, the DOJ's Antitrust Division sent civil investigative demands to the nation's four biggest meat packers. Since that time, the American people have seen no public results from the investigation. In fact, there's no information to even suggest whether the investigation has concluded or if it's still going on. Representative Dusty Johnson, a Republican out of South Dakota, previously reported that Congress had not received any update from the Department of Justice on its own investigation into the cattle prices changes. He says this is not unusual, as agencies are historically, tight-lipped about ongoing investigations, and there are legal reasons for that. However, he did note that the joint statement from leading cattle groups out of a Phoenix meeting in May of this year confirmed their joint desire for a final report, DOJ, at the producer-led meeting. Four member leaders from the American Farm Bureau Federation, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, National Farmers Union, RCAF USA, and the United States Cattlemen's Association established several action items, including demanding DOJ issue an update on the investigation into the packer activity. Johnson says it's important to make sure these investigations get run to the ground and the DOJ investigation is for real rather than just investigations for show. I think that there's a strong coalition of the fact that these investigations really do need to conclude. And then when we need to have a transparent release of their findings. Following the meetings, Johnson and Senator John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, made a letter to the U.S. Attorney General urging the Department of Justice to move forward with their investigation into these anti-competitive practices in the meat packing industries. They just won't let that deal with the packers go. They're just getting after it. They just won't let it go. Sometimes you got to let it go and figure out what's going on, because I think they don't have enough help to start with. Now, I'm not taking up for the Packers. Do not get me wrong here. I'm not taking up the Packers. But if you read all these articles every day that I read about all this stuff, yes, it's getting a little better because our feedlot numbers are slowly declining. But when you're supposed to have 6,000 people there and you only got 2,000 people there working, your costs go way up because your electricity bill and all that is still the same. And these people, these retail peoples, are bidding high numbers. So anyway, I've been harping on it for about a month now, but I'm just telling you, buy local beef from a local rancher and farmer and get it processed local and quit worrying about it. It'll be just fine. This is from Dr. Paul Beck. He's been on the show once or twice, and I was just out there at the Clemmie Ranch at Bessie, and he was out there leading the field day that they had out there. It was a great time. I got some future guests coming up in the next 2 to 4 weeks that were out there, very knowledgeable in pasture, burning, rangeland, cattle, the whole nine yards going on. But this was his article that I found in the cow-calf corner. He said, in my last article, I introduced the wisdom of my great Uncle Ed, who was, when asked, how do you make money in the cattle business? And always gave the pat answer, buy low, sell high, keep them alive, and put them on cheap. Last week, I covered buy low, sell high, which is true up to a point. But we often lose sight of the fact of by overbidding for that fancy set of calves that comes through the sale barn, or when they buy a plain set of calves, it will always be discounted. The classic example of buying at a discount is buying the unweaned horned bull calf. This is what Don Gill, the former OSU State Extension Livestock Specialist, called mismanaged calves. Many of us would call them unmanaged calves because there's no indication the calf had ever been in a working chute for vaccination, deworming, or any other management input. When we say keep them alive, we really mean keep them healthy. Castration and dehorning after weaning adds stress on top of stresses of weaning, transport, and marketing, which can lead to reduced response to vaccination and increase disease. Nutritionist deficiencies can reduce immune response and lead to more disease pressure. So sometimes those thin calves may not be as great a deal as we think they are. Research was conducted on southeastern calves that entered the receiving pens as bulls or steers were tracked through receiving and grazing. These 270 calves weighed 463 on arrival. calves that arrived as bulls and castrated during initial processing had 78% first pull bovine respiratory disease, BRD, while steers had 50% morbidity. Bull calves had 2.5 times more second treatments and 1.7 times more third treatments for BRD. During the 42-day receiving period, calves that arrived as steers gained 1.8.5 pounds per day, while calves that were castrated after arrival only gained 1.2 pounds per day during receiving. Preconditioned calves are much less stressed and more resilient to disease because they've already been through the weaning process, have been bunk broke, and vaccinated. Research comparing preconditioned calves and the calves of unknown history purchased from sale barns show the advantages of preconditioning for the buyer. Calves were managed the same after arrival at the stocker facility with a 42-day receiving period, where calves were processed and fed long-stem hay-based diets. Preconditioned calves gained more than sale-born calves through processing. And both of these were bought from sale barns. So ain't got nothing going on with sale barns. They're just talking about the two different types of calves they bought. The sale barn calves through receiving was 2.6 versus 1.9 pounds per day. Sale barn calves had a 10 times greater first pull BRD, 26 more times pull BRD. Animal health is one of the primary concerns for beef cattle conditions. Increased health issues affect performance much further down the line than we often think. We tracked over 1,300 calves through the receiving and grazing and found that the increase in BRD treatments reduced performance not only during receiving but also during subsequent grazing and finishing. So often our goal is to buy low, sell high, and keep them alive, run counter to each other. Well, that was from Professor Paul Beck at the OSU. He's a OSU extension specialist from up Stillwater. Well, when I get back, we're going to talk some more beef. So stand by. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. First sale last Tuesday, September the 28th. We sold 580 cows, bulls, and calves. Thursday, September the 30th, we sold 3,185 calves and feeders, for a total of 3,765 cattle for the week. Tuesday, better killing cows ranked 72 up to 79.50, with their thin cows bringing 44 to 61.50, bulls ranked 79 to 94. 2 to 5-year-old bred cows brought 1,000 up to 1,460, with their 6 to 8-year-old bred cows 750 to 1,000, 5 to 8-year-old pairs 1,250 to 1,350. Under steer cattle, 3 to 350 weight steers, $185 to $2. 4 to 450, $150 to $165. 5 to 550, $152 to $166.5. 6 to 650 off the cow, $124 to $142. With the long wean, 6 to 650 steers, $138 to $151. 7 to 750, $125.5 to $135. 8 to 850, $148 to $158. 9 to 950, $134 to $154. 1,050 to 1,100 pound steers, $130 to $25 to $131.75. We sold 72 in one bunch, weighing 902, bring 158. We sold 64 steers in another bunch, weighing 1,083, bring 130.25. We sold 76 in another bunch, weighing 949, bring 151.75. Pays to take your feeders to a sale that works 100% for the seller, but also one that has 14 to 15 feeder bars. We climbed a dime and a quarter a time, making that guy $5 a hundred. On our heifers, 4 to 450 heifers, 137 to 146, 5 to 550, 132 to 136, 6 to 650, 124 to 133.5, 7 to 750, 126 to 146.50, 8 to 850, 131 up to 141, with our 9 to 950 heifers, 113 to 115. Again, we sold 3,185 calves and feeders, finished the sale at 2 p.m. We work 100% for the seller, never lying to the buyer. For this Tuesday, October the 5th, we will have 35 bred cows to complete dispersal, 3 to 5 years old. Another 50 bred cows and pairs. More by sale time. We'll see you this Tuesday, 8 a.m. sharp. Thanks again, Jerry Nine and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
Hi, I'm James with Western Equipment. Listen up, any high school junior and senior, and any parent or grandparent of any high school junior or senior. By your junior and senior year, it's time to start planning for a job. Right now, if you don't know what you want to do, check out the John Deere AgTech program through Western Equipment. It's a two-year program, and afterwards, we guarantee you a solid job at one of our 21 locations in Texas, Oklahoma, or New Mexico. Now is the time. Visit west-equip.com/careers for more information to apply.
It's so convenient for farmers and ranchers to get what you need in one place. The Wheeler General Store is the do-it-best hardware store that carries vet supplies to doctor your animals, high-pro feed, also master hand milling and smart lick tubs. Delivery is available if you need it. And at Wheeler Ag, right there on site, they've got dry fertilizer application with blending capabilities. Wheeler General Store and Wheeler Ag on Highway 152, a mile east of the four-way stop in Wheeler, Texas.
You can also find the Wheeler General Store on Facebook and Instagram.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Yeehaw. How about this forecast? How about this Hobart Farm and Garden forecast? Looks like today, high 75, 70% chance of rain. Tonight, 58, 70% chance of rain. There's a slight chance of rain tomorrow, 20%. High 78. That'll be great. The winds are going to be out of the north, northwest, 5 to 9 miles an hour. And me and some local Aggies and some Guppies from Sayre, we're heading down I-40, crossing that state line at Shamrock to take on some of those farmer and ranchers over there in Texas Tech and Texas A&M hands over there in the I-40 Ryder Cup between Shamrock and Sayre, Oklahoma. So we're going to have some fun. And then it looks like it might be drying out where Sunday when I get home, I can start cutting some more hay down. So anyway, I need to get some hay down, get things cleaned up, ready to put some pasture, or not pasture, but some wheat in here in a couple of weeks. There was the radar is showing that it's creeping closer. When the show started or when I checked it a little bit, about 15 minutes before the show, it was the lines were going from south to north, and they was right at Amarillo. It looks like the storms are about halfway to Shamrock now, so they're creeping this way. Looks like we're going to hopefully get some rain. Temperatures in our listening area, it's in the 50s right now. Up in the panhandle, it's good fall weather up here. It's first day of hunting season, Maine hunting season. Archery opened today. I didn't even check Facebook, see if anybody got anything down. I didn't even go because after that banquet last night, I'm dragging. I'm telling you, I'm hurting. 70 degrees, looks like the warm spot. No, they're not the warm spot. 70 degrees at Arnett, 69 at Camargo, 70 at Bessie, 70 at Hobart. The hot spot is Mangum, Oklahoma, right square right there in the middle of Greer County at 71 degrees. Altus is also 71 degrees, and Hollis is 70. So that is your Hobart Farm and Garden weather update for the Long Ranger. And anyway, I've been meaning to talk about this for quite a while now, so I'm going to bring it up because I think it's going to affect our county and state fairs, and it's a good thing. The House Agriculture Committee approved a bill on Tuesday of last week, and this is a late story, but I misplaced it and I found it, to create a $500 million a year grant program to support local and county and state fairs that lost attendance and revenue due to the pandemic. An estimated 90% or 98% of the fairs were canceled last year, and more are at risk in the on this wave of COVID going on right now. County and local fairs, which combine agriculture displays and competitions with entertainment such as carnival rides, concerts, races, are run by nonprofit societies on ticket sales and attendance, says sponsor representative Jimmy Penenet a California Democrat. They emphasized our agriculture in our country and they unify our communities, said him, while generating $4.67 billion a year in economic activities. With the Delta variant on the rise, we have to provide these fairs the support they need. The Bipartisan American Fairs Rescue Act, H.R. 2424, authorizes $500 million a year during the pandemic national emergency and for the first year after the end of the health emergency. The U.S. Department of Agriculture would send the money to states, which would be charged of handing out the money to everybody else. Some 2,000 fairs are held annually in North America, according to the International Association of Fairs. Mrs. Watson credited is the father, Mr. Watson credited it is father of the U.S. agriculture fairs, organized the first fair at Pittsfield, Massachusetts in 1811, and for years helped committees organize the agriculture societies that staged the fairs. It was not immediately clear when the grant bill would be debated on the House floor, but a companion Senate bill, S-1092, awaits a hearing in the committee. If the legislation becomes law, backers will need to win passage of funding to put the grant program into operation. And also during a two-hour meeting, the Agriculture Committee also approved a House resolution honoring blueberries, a fruit native to North America. Both items have a resolution, and if the fair bills were approved on a voice vote with little or no opposition. Republicans on the increasingly polarized committee spoke at length against the administration's $3.5 trillion Build Back Better bill, an increase in the U.S. debt limit, and the committee's misplaced priorities. So there you have that. And then what do we have over here? We have a deal by Mr. Marty Smith. He's a Florida cattleman. He says, ask 10 beef producers about their ranch's sustainability for the long haul, and at least 9 of them will say it's about making a profit. Without that, well, what else counts? Florida cattleman Marty Smith won't argue the point. No other parts of sustainability matters if we can't make a profit, he said. But he also knows the profit statement alone won't necessarily carry the conversation with those outside of agriculture, especially environmental activists. We have to show people that we are not causing environmental problems, but we are actually the solution. Smith is the immediate past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the NCBA. No sooner did his term end last year than he jumped full bore into another assignment. He is the chairperson of the new Sustainability Task Force. Smith made it clear in several Zoom meetings with 16 other beef producers that every voice would be heard, including the sustainable only means profitable voice. They shared their initial report on the cattle industry convention and laid out 3 pillars of sustainability: environmental, social, and economic. The first goal is to demonstrate climate neutrality of the cattle industry by the year 2040. Frankly, says Smith, we're already there. And what we do in agriculture is already putting carbon back into the soil. We will demonstrate that to everyone through research that about that. Smith thinks his own farm, Smith Brothers, Wachichuca, if I said that right, ranch, has a unique place in the discussion. It's a 5-generation cow-calf ranch, but the history of the cattle on that land goes much further back, 500 years, in fact. The first cattle ever brought to North America come from Ponce de Leon, the first European to explore what is Florida now. In 1521, we have sustained ranching here for over 500 years. He likes to show visitors the timber that his family maintains there, much of it which is 500 years ago, along with the native wildlife. We have to deal with 60 inches of rainfall here every year. Boo-hoo. We just want 20. Sometimes much more, and it helped maintain clean water for the 20 million people who live in the state in this area, he tells him. Farmers and ranchers may give you the disgusted eye roll when the sustainability issue comes up. While Smith knows the feeling, he also believes beef producers have to address this misinformation, particularly from the activists who don't necessarily dig for the truth. And that's called fake news and social media right there. He points to the United Nations report from a few years ago called Livestock's Long Shadow. They said cattle account for 18% of the total greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. They used it all wrong, he said, and we pointed it out. While the UN later modified the livestock impact downward, perceptions die hard, and the original report still surfaces. Now Smith adds that our own EPA calculates that the U.S. cattle account for just 2% of the greenhouse gases at most. We have to show the positive side of our business, says Smith. This is a sustainable product we have. NCBA wants to be the trusted leader of the United States cattle industry, and we have to step out and tell the story. It's been a big deal for me, and I try to sustain the ranch for another generation or two. What can we do? He said, continue what you're doing by improving the efficiency of beef production on your own land. Jessica Gilrith, environmental researcher at the Texas A&M University, did a study to evaluate practices cow-calf producers could use to reduce their environmental footprint. The top five things are improve feed efficiency, utilize terminal crossing systems, reduce mature cow size, get higher calf weights, wean calves earlier. The first three are the top strategies, she says. They also happen to line up perfectly with what you probably do anyway to improve your own bottom line. They increase the pounds of beef produced on the same or lower inputs. It's especially important on cow-calf farms. She says that because of the segment of the cattle industry that accounts for 70% of the methane emissions, if every producer did them all, the cattle industry would reduce its environmental footprint by minimum 16%. So there's your update from that. And last thing for this big day, Friday, last day of the week, I want to talk to you guys about is cybersecurity and ag. You'll never see their faces, but high-tech criminals lurk far beyond the farm gate. Their intent is to cause chaos and financial loss for the American farmers and ranchers. Their risk has also heightened as agriculture becomes an increasingly digitally interconnected with the country's food supply and transportation networks. Agriculture was reminded of the ever-present threat of cyber attack this week with the new cooperative in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Confirmed Monday, it had been hit with a ransomware attack that affected the grain cooperative's operations, which included 60 elevators located across north, central, and western Iowa. These attackers used to go after the Amazons and banking institutes of the world. But now they're looking at different companies, specifically those in the agriculture and energy companies. Sarah Armstrong, who is the Chief Information Security Officer and Vice President of IT Security and Privacy for CHS. She said that in the trenches, they're in the IT trenches every day for CHS, a diversified and global agribusiness cooperative organized in 1929 and headquartered in Minnesota. She did not shy away when asked to talk about the challenges large entities like CHS face from cyber attackers. And they're after the small ones too. And so don't think they're just after the big boys, because there's some small companies out there that's got some bucks so they can pay this ransomware. They are looking for targets they believe are more prone to caving under attack, or being exploited and not having the proper security systems, resources in place. We are seeing it, and we are hearing it from smaller companies getting prominent from cyber attacks and ransomware every day. So it's a mean world out there. They don't rob banks anymore. They just get on the internet and hack into you and get your ransom going. But Monday, I'll see you guys here Monday. Lacey will be back Tuesday. I got somebody from Peanut Council here Wednesday. It's an exciting week. God bless and have a great day.
This is KECO, Elk City.
Heading to the Hill, I'm Chris Foster.